This has generated a great deal of excitement, and we're delighted you all are here. And we have two petitions. 1001 relating to amending 809.19.2 relating to the content of appellate appendices, and 809.62.2F relating to the content of appendix to petitions to review. And I see the same people are presenting on both. So if it's, I leave it to your choice whether you want to appear for both the same ones or you want to come, sit down, and then I'll call the next one. So whichever is convenient for you all, since the subject matter is so similar, I leave it to you. One is what the unanimous choice is, and it's mine too. So Peg Carlson, Chief Staff Attorney for the Court of Appeals, is presenter on both. Ms. Carlson, good seeing you again.
It's been a few days. Thank you, Chief Justice of the Court. My name is Peg Carlson. I'm the Chief Staff Attorney for the Court of Appeals, and I am appearing for the petitioners in both of the petitions. Petitioner in 1001 is Chief Judge Brown from the Court of Appeals, and the petitioner in 1002 is Clerk of the Supreme Court David Shanker, who was unable to be here today. I don't have much to say. I can tell you that the catalyst for both petitions was the Court's amendment to 809.23. 3C of that rule requires parties to provide a copy of any unpublished opinion that they cite in their brief, and the sole intent of these petitions is to spell out clearly in the appellate rules where those copies should go in the appellate court level. The need for the potential need for such a rule change was identified by the committee that this court appointed after the amendment to 809.23, or as part of that amendment. That committee went through and anticipated what rules may be changed to help implement the change in the citation rule. This was one of the suggestions that was put in the committee report that was filed with the court in May of 2009. It was presented to the Court of Appeals judges, who agreed that it was an appropriate topic for a rule change petition. 1001 was filed by the Court of Appeals. Shortly thereafter, 1002 was filed by Attorney Shanker. The critical point that I would like to stress to the court is that 809.23.3C is the rule that obligates a party to provide the courts with a copy of the opinion. All these two petitions do is set out, is suggest a way how to comply with it at the appellate court level.
Okay, here's my question.
Yes.
As I remember and read, 809.19.2 relates to appendices or briefs only in the Court of Appeals. Is that right?
I believe that the form and length, yes.
So, because that's the reason I think that, or I remember it as such, is that when I looked at 809, defines appellant as a person who files a notice of appeal, which is not usually here, and then
right.
Subchapter 2 is called civil appeal procedure in court of appeal. So I read the brief requirements as 809.19.2 governing only the court of appeals.
Well, I don't know that I would.
I know.
I'm out of my forte there if you're talking about how what the Supreme Court does to
but you know,
for their briefing requirements.
Let me just tell you that then they have subchapter 8, which is miscellaneous procedures in the Court of Appeal, and then they have subchapter 6, which is appellate procedure in the Supreme Court, but I don't see it, and Dave Shanker amended the contents of the petition for review, and I know why he did it, because there's nothing to amend on what's in the
right.
appendix in the brief here. So unless there's something I've missed, which is quite possible, that says, hey, whatever you do for the Court of Appeals, do here. I mean, it's a bigger problem than
that. Well, I was going to say, that applies to many requirements.
Okay. It's 809.62.2. I'm going to look at that.
I know that 62, the 60s, is Supreme Court practice.
Yeah, it says that's all the contents of the petition.
I agree that 809.19 is primarily Court of Appeals, but...
So anyway, but that's a different issue.
My unschooled thought that it does apply to the Supreme Court,
yeah.
But
I just
again,
have to find the right provision.
I'm out of my element when you're talking about Supreme Court practice.
But the issue somebody raised was, and I think this Ms. Kearney is going to talk about it, is you ought to put it in the respondent's brief
and
in the reply brief.
I can speak. I can, if you want, I could speak to that.
Why don't you do that?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because... The appellate practice section raised similar objections
right.
to the Board of Governors last week, and Attorney Kearney and I both spoke, and ultimately
right.
the board, I believe, wrote a letter in support of the petitions.
Right.
And I can say that one of the points that was mentioned in the appellate practice and now the most recent submission by Attorneys Kearney and Helfinger was that the petition, particularly 1001, did not pick up respondent's brief.
Right.
And I can say that when the committee met several months ago to think about this, we did think that 809.3b was sufficient to pull it in upon further review when we received the letter. I certainly agreed, and I know Attorney Owens agreed, that it could be more clear, and I believe that there is some suggested language in the court material that would expressly pick up and extend the obligation to the respondents.
So you don't object to that?
Not at all.
Okay. And you think it's a big cost?
As to the cost, I think whatever cost is created by these petitions stems from 809.23.3c and not from these petitions. I think that I can say that before the rule went into effect, I dare say that as many questions were posed to the clerk's office as to where to put them, where to put these kind of opinions, as I know that Attorney Kearney kind of suggests, well, of course you would put them in the appendix. Well, that's self-evident to those of us who practice and participate in the field, but I do know that questions were raised back in July when the rule was changed, and it just seems better practice to lay it out in the rule and make it clear for anyone who's filing a brief.
Do you have any sense, which is a little off topic, but I'll ask it anyway, any sense of the extent to which lawyers are citing?
I did about an hour and a half ago. I looked into that.
You're reading my mind. But
that's what we're supposed to do before we come here. I can tell you that the Court of Appeals judges have been asked to monitor the briefs during a three-month period.
Mm-hmm.
February, March, and April, and submit those responses to the administrative assistant, to the chief judge, and that's the person I asked. And the responses are not yet all in, but about a dozen, not many, but there's a really small pool of eligible opinions at this
mm-hmm.
point.
That's right, only since July 1.
And I know, for instance, in a couple of instances, they are opinions that are issued by the court and recommended for publication, but the publication committee has not yet voted on it.
Mm-hmm.
And those I'm not sure.
Right. May become less.
They're not the focus of the amended
right.
rule.
Good. Anything else you want to say?
Any
I'm sorry
questions?
I interrupted you. Or any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Carlson. Ms. Kearney.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. I am Ann Berleman Kearney. Well, it says that I am appearing for the appellate practice section. That actually is not true because I'm appearing for myself and for Mike Helfinger. The State Bar has endorsed both of these petitions, and I'm before you today as my individual capacity to tell you some of the concerns that were expressed in the Bar but didn't quite make it to the official position. And these are obviously positions I still hold. We do oppose the petitions 1001 and 1002 as currently constituted for a couple of reasons. One is because there is cost here. There already is a rule that says that you need to append unpublished decisions to whatever you're filing. It's my view and that of Mike Helfingers and some other appellate practitioners that we've spoken with that that's sufficient, and that if you keep adding certifications to or requirements to the certifications, we're really coming up at this point with quite a long list. And it seems that this particular certification is not quite on par with the other certifications required. Mailing, that seems to be quite important, you know, length, format, that sort of thing. But now we're really kind of trickling down into requirements where we're wondering whether that really is necessary. As a secondary matter, or at a minimum, we do think that these rule changes as proposed are under-inclusive. They don't include the respondent's brief. We already have talked about that. Ms. Carlson did. But also, there's nothing with regard to the reply brief. And it is the case sometimes that an unpublished decision has to be appended or at least spoken to in response or reply to something that was raised in the respondent's brief. And then there's also the amicus issue. Obviously, appendix to amicus briefs, not the most favored thing, but oftentimes there's the need, if you're an amicus, to also cite to opinions, and perhaps an unpublished decision might be part of that. So those are basically our points in opposition.
The petition were amended, or the order amended, to require a reply brief to also have a copy of any unpublished opinion, and whatever the rule is or about amicus brief, that be required. Because right now we've got one in front of us that says Ellen's brief, respondent's brief, both have to have a copy in the appendix of an unpublished opinion. So, reply brief, amicus brief, would that satisfy you?
Truly, to satisfy me, it'd be nice not to have to do the certification at all, but certainly, yes, that would be.
Let's first talk about which brief should have it in.
Yes, I think so, okay. Chief Justice. And I realize there's no real elegant way to do this. When we were talking about it, we were trying to come up with a way to say, well, let's cover everything. And I guess one way to do that would be in the rule with unpublished decisions and just say in that rule that any brief would have to be changed. But it is the case that we're pointing out a problem that requires you to change multiple rules.
But this is where everybody will look to see what's required in the brief. They're not going to look back to something else.
No, that makes perfect
after
sense.
The fact. So
that does make perfect sense.
A little and cumbersome, but it works.
And so, yes, my answer would be yes. If you did change not the petitions, but of course what the order would be so that it swept in the respondent's brief or reply brief, and even if you wanted to, non-party brief, that certainly would take care of the bulk of our concerns.
You know, I have a little bit of a concern. I mean, I'm a little bit surprised at your opposition. If you look at 809.19.2, wherein there's a suggestion that this be added, what it says the appendix should contain is the opinion or order of the circuit court. And I think what Ms. Carlson has proposed is that we put in the opinion of the Court of Appeals, and that's, I believe, something that's not taken care of anyplace else, because our 809.63, once this court takes jurisdiction, then the rules of appellate practice apply. And so if someone is trying to figure out, now how do I do the appendix so I don't goof up and I'm in the Supreme Court, I would think there would be some confusion if that weren't listed there for them to use. Do you have something else that I'm kind of missing?
I do not have anything that you're missing, Chief Justice, or Justice. I think it's a question of, in our mind, adding to the certification requirement. But I do take both your point and that of the Chief Justice that if you're actually looking at these rules, that you're more likely to look at the appendix rule and try and make your decision there.
Right, and to try to figure out. When I look at it, I try to, let's do it the way that will confuse people the least. And if they're trying to do what we want them to do, they'll find it in kind of a logical spot. And I know when I was in practice, I always checked the statutes, and then I had my judicial assistant check what I did to be sure that I was in compliance, because you want to, and that's where I would look, is what does the appendix contain, particularly when this court takes jurisdiction, it then goes back and pulls this section into what's going to be going on with briefs and appendix. So.
Well, it does make sense to try and make this as easy as possible.
Right.
I agree, and in fact, we have been talking with the clerk's office about whether or not at some point there shouldn't be a checklist for everyone to go through and say your appendix has to have A, B, C, D, E, and have that blessed by everybody that needs to be blessing it so that it is easier for people to pull it.
Sounds like a good rule.
So you'll probably hear about that sometime soon. But so that does make sense, and I guess then our secondary position is the one that the Chief Justice has asked about, which is, you know, do we want at least then all of these rules, you know, sub 3, sub 4, to be all, and sub 7 for that matter, to be looked at with regard to this requirement, and the answer would be yes.
Thank you.
Maybe I'm not hearing you correctly, but I gather your biggest complaint is against certification.
Yes.
I have heard you right.
Yes, but of the weight to my objection, the bigger objection is the confusion that could be caused by just having this apply to the appellant's brief.
Got it.
But
okay.
I will tell you that when you talk to appellate practitioners, we had a meeting about this. We had about 20 people on the phone talking about it. Not surprisingly, there are some grumblings about the fact that there are a lot of certifications being required and that it is kind of a trap for the unwary there, too, because there are so many certifications. So the point was raised, and I'm obviously raising it with you here, which is that at some point it seems that we're adding a lot of certifications on to our requirements.
But if it's read carefully, it's also a checklist.
That is true.
Okay. Any other comments, Ms. Kearney?
No, thank you very much.
You commented as to both.
Yes, right. That's regard to both.
And do you know what the provision is that says what you should do in this court other than a petition for review? What the brief should be?
It's 809-63, Chief, if you look. It says once we take jurisdiction, then the rules of appellate procedure click in. So you have to go back then to the 809-19 sub 2 for the appendix.
Jurisdiction, the rules governing procedures in the Court of Appeals are applicable to proceedings. So unless otherwise offered, so we have to say a procedure includes the appendix.
Well, okay.
Does seem to be broad enough to include that as well. So.
Well, narrow
enough. I do
see your
point on looking at how they're set up. It was interesting to look at that contents.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Does anyone else wish to hear? Ms. Carson, certainly.
Thank you. If I could just speak to the couple things that were talked about with Attorney Kearney. About reply briefs, I think the reason it might be clumsy or inartful to try and fit this kind of language in a reply brief is typically appendices, which is what we're talking about, are not filed with reply briefs. It would be my thought, and I don't know that much about amicus practice, because that seems, I think, is done more in the Supreme Court than in the Court of Appeals level. But to the extent that someone is wanting to cite an unpublished opinion in a reply brief and they're uncertain as to whether or not, or if they want court validation for what they're going to do, which is attach a copy to the brief, that's what the motion practice is for. Simply filing a quick motion with the Court of Appeals would lead to a 10-minute, yes, that's what you should do, order issued. I think that could be left to motion practice. That would be my comment, because it's going to take some tricky drafting, again, because appendices are not, they don't travel with reply briefs that much, hardly ever.
Kill it to
no,
put under
no,
4C.
The concept, if it can be done, I don't have any problem with the concept. I'm just explaining that I don't think it's going to happen that often, and that it might be something that's more left, or better left to an ad hoc process.
Do you know what?
Yes.
If 809-63... adopt all of this.
I agree. I
then,
think that is the rule.
Then you ought to put in reply brief should cover. Put that in. It doesn't hurt anything under 809-19-4C, and you could do that under wherever we have amicus briefs.
such a cold friend of the court with non-pardon briefs. I've just put it in. I mean, it doesn't hurt.
No,
I agree you as to the likelihood is not high.
I was just explaining why
it wasn't done.
And I think that it could be handled ad hoc, but if the court wants to put something in a rule, that would be fine. And the other thing I wanted to speak about was the certification. I agree that does seem to be where the genesis is coming from, but the certification, again, like 809.23.3c, the certification requirement already exists as to appendices, and when we were here several years ago, when that topic was before the court, I'm sure I said something to the effect that the Court of Appeals judges were suggesting the certification process because they felt that, again, making the attorney sit down and actually sign the certification made it more likely that the appendix would be useful for the court. Adding this one additional topic or item in there, I don't think it increases that much of a burden to the certification process, and the reasons why the certification existed, you know, several years ago when that rule was changed are just as valid now as they were then.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Does anyone else wish to appear on either petition number 1001 or 1002? No one has offered to appear. That closes our hearing on 10-01 and 10-02. Court will take a few moments in recess. That is, our hearing is closed on 1001, 1002. We will take a short recess and appear in an open conference to discuss 1001 and 1002, and also to continue our discussion on 0903 relating to submission of evidence originating in a language other than English. Thank you. We're going to have to set up the podium. Otherwise, we're okay. Oh, I thought you disappeared.
Yesterday, she said.
Okay.
Teresa told Julie to be ready on the court reporter.
Oh, I know.